Hare Krishna, this is day 2nd in Bhakti Shastri course being taught by His Holiness Jayadev Swami Maharaji in Shrida Mayapur in Nectar of on Bhakti Shastri course. Hare Krishna.
Janandhasya Janandana Shalakaya Chakshin Viditam Veena Tasmai Shri Gurudeva Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Thapitam Veena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Pada Vaiham Dhati Shatadam Sikha Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavansha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Gaganatan Vitam Tham Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitam He Krishna Paranat Sanho Neena Bandho Chakapate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Satta Kansha Rogi, Padhe Vrindavaneshade, Prashabhan Sute Devi, Anamani Kaneshade, Kapataru Vyascha, Kapasin Jogre Vyascha, Kapita Nam Bhavane Vyo, Vaishnave Vyo, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhar, Shiva Shadi Gaur Bhaktivinoda, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Welcome back.
Welcome to the Singapore. Yesterday we discussed, first of all, our transliteration system for the Sanskrit that we use in all of Srila Prabhupada's books. DVT writing. Are there any questions about that? Did any questions pop up over the...
About
our Sanskrit transliteration, yeah.
I have one. Can we know that Krishna actually spoke in this meaning? Is that true? Can we know?
That's a separate question. But it's given to us in this form. Now, if you placed, I'd never heard the question placed before Prabhupada, did Krishna speak in this meter? Prabhupada always just presented these are the actual words of Krishna as they are. Now, whether they're Krishna's words distilled by Vyasadeva into meter, or whether they were spoken exactly in that metric form by Krishna himself, I will remain neutral. I won't express an opinion because who am I? I never heard Prabhupada say anything about it. But this is how we get it. Any other questions about Sanskrit, meter, pronunciation, writing?
Just comments on what it's worth, if anything. Bhagavad Gita. Soul of God, that which is sown. So Krishna sang, and one thinks musically and using that meter, and there's such wonderful anusthup and different meters in Gita, and I don't see any reason to doubt why this is sung. The Gita has it is. Anusthup chanda, you know, yeah.
In Gita.
Yes?
But then there are one or two little discrepancies and grammatical things and theater and Gita, and I was thinking with my Buddhist intelligence that Krishna probably wouldn't make such a mistake.
If Krishna makes such mistakes, they're not mistakes. It's known that Krishna sometimes gets so enchanted by Srimati Radharani that he begins to milk a bull instead of a cow. On the transcendental platform, all sorts of things happen. Anything else? Okay. So then we're fully prepared to chant this chapter. Right? Chapter 1. This is a separate class. I have a whole, those who are interested in the topic of ears and hearing and the loss thereof can go to my website www.jswami.info and look at the article about under about health. There's an article about what's called noise-induced hearing loss. The summary is that ears are something like precision instruments, and they can be blasted out. The instruments can be damaged by very high volumes. And this is a small room, and it has cement walls, and when we play mridanga and kartals at top volume, we're not really doing what we need to do. We can play more softly, and that will be a kindness to the ears of those who hear. It will be a little sweeter also, and we can save the full power kartals and mridangas for big rooms and outside kirtan, especially the old men among us will appreciate it, and those who'd rather not have old men's ears at a young age. Okay? But you can chant as loud as you like.
Rashtravacha Dharma Chetre Guru Chetre Samaveta Yayut Sabaha Mamaka Sandavastaiva Kim Kurvata Sanjaya Sanjayo Vacha Krishvatu Pandavani Kam Yudham Duryodhanastada Acharyam Upasangamya Raja Vachanamabravit Ashraitam Panduputranam Acharya Matim Shabum Yudham Drupadaputrena Sava Shishena Dhimata Atkashura Maheshvasa Bhimarjuna Samayuti Yuyuthano Virasascha Drupadascha Mahadataha Krishnaketus Jaitana Kashi Rajascha Viryavan Kurunje Kunti Bhojascha Shaivyascha Radhapungavaha Yudhaman Yushka Vikranta Uttamaujascha Viryavan Sobhadraujo Padeyascha Sarvaeva Mahadataha Asmakam Tu Vishishtaye Tani Bhota Vijottama Nayakas Mamasanyasya Sangyartam Tamravimite Avanti Mastakarnascha Kribascha Samitindaya Ashwatama Vikarnascha Somadaptisatayvacha Anyecha Bahavashura Madarte Chakravimitaha Nana Shastra Praharana Sarve yuddha visharadaha Apayaktam tadasmakam Bhavan nishma virakshitam Paryaptam Siddhame Tesham Balam Imahi Rakshitam Ayaneshu Shasarveshu Yatha Bhagam Yavastita Bhismameva Vivakshantu Bhavanta Sarva Evahi Satya Sanjanayan Harsham Kuru Vritha Pitamaha Singhanaram Vinaj Yoshchai Shankham Tatmau Prasapavan Tata Shankhascha Peryascha Panavanaka Govukaha Sahasai Vajya Hanyanta Sashabda Sumudo Bhavan Tata Shekhar Vajar Yumde Mahati Jandane Siddhau Matava Pandavashtaiva Divyo Shankhau Pradatmatuhu Panchajanyam Hishikesho Devadattam Tananjayaha Aumdram Dharma Maha Shankham Vima Karma Prakodaraha Ananta Vishayam Raja Kunti Utro Yudhishthiraha Nakulasa Devascha Sugosha Mani Pushpakau Kasha Cha Parameshvasa Shikandhi Cha Maharataha Krishnanundo Vidasascha Satyakishtha Parajitaha Rupadoga Vadeyascha Sarvasha Prithivipate Sohadrascha Mahabahu Shankhan Tadmu Pratakracham Shahosho Tadadachanam Kriyani Vyadarayas Navascha Prithivin Jaiva Tumulo Vyanunadayan Atavya Vastitan Vritva Tartanashtram Kapitaja Paritse Shastritam Pate Dhanurujyam Yapandavaha Vishikesham Tadavakyam Idam Aha Mahipate Arjuna Vacham Senayoru Vajor Madhye Pratam Tavayame Tuta Yavare Sanjiksheham Yodhu Kamam Vastita Karmaya Samayodhavyam Asmi Maranam Kuryade Yosya Manam Vekshayam Yare Tetra Samadha Bhartarashtra Shadur Bhutter Yudhe Vriyata Kirjavaha Sanjaya Vasa Eva Mukto Rishikesho Kura Keshena Bharata Sena Yoru Kayor Madhye Sthapayetva Ratottamam Bhishma Yoga Pramakata Sarve Shamsa Mahishitam Uvasa Vasa Vashyaita Samavetam Kuru Niti Satra Pashyastitam Partha Pitri Nata Pitamaha Arayam Matavan Pratrin Putram Putram Sakitata Swashuram Surigashaiva Sena Yoru Vayorati Pansamiksha Sakantaya Sarvamam Mura Vakasitam Kripaya Paraya Vishto Vishnida Dira Amrami Arjuna Vacha Vishvemam Sajanam Krishna Yuyusum Nabhupatitam Siddhanti Mahagatrani Mukhamcha Parishvishmiti Veta Kushcha Sri Deme Romaharsha Sajayate Sandhimam Sanskate Hasta Tvakchaiva Kavidasyate Nasasak Somya Vastatum Pramativa Chane Manaha Nimittani Sadashyani Vivaritani Keshava Nachashreyo Dupashyami Hadva Svajana Mahave Nakashe Vijayam Krishna Nacharajam Sukhadicha Kim no Raji Namovinda Kim mo Raji Deva Yena Te Kamsikam No Rajam Moga Sukhadicha Saime Vastita Yudhe Karam Jaiva Dhanadicha Ayam Raja Yudhara Putra Tathai Vaja Pitamaha Matula Shodhra Pautra Shyala Sampanti Nasata Edana Antum Ishtamiti Tumomi Vasudurana Abhidra Yogya Rajasya Edo Kipnu Manikate Nihatya Dharada Shkandha Abhidhi Chyasana Apave Vashare Lashman Advaitana Tatayana Tatman Narayam Mantum Ardharashkan Samantaman Sajanam Nikatam Hatva Sukhinatya Mahathava Yajyak Yete Napashyanti Lodhoka Nachetasaha Kulakshaya Kritam Dosham Vipadrohe Shapatakam Asatna Jayam Asmabhi Paparasvati Vartitum Kulakshaya Kritam Dosham Kapashyat Hirjanardana Kulakshaya Pranashyanti Kulakshama Sanatana Parne Naste Kulam Krishnam Adharmo Vivavakyuta Adharma Vivava Krishna Pradushanti Kulakshya Sri Kudusha Shubarshneya Jayate Varna Sankara Sankara Nadakayaiva Kulakshana Kulakshya Adanti Kitaro Kesha Lukta Pinto Nakakriya Toshare Kai Kudurjana Varna Sankara Karakaye Kulakshate Dhani Karma Kulakharma Shashata Kutsanta Kudurjanam Manushayam Jagardana Narakeviyatam Vaso Mahatityam Shushuna Aho Kata Mahatpapam Kartum Yajnatayam Yajnatya Sukhalokena Antum Sanyamanudyata Yani Mamakati Kharam Asatkam Shatkapadaya Dharsarashkarane Hanyam Tanmekshena Tanambhare Sanjayo Vasha Eva Mukkarjana Sankhe Vrdo Vasta Ukavisha Krivitya Sarnavashapam Shoka Sankhik Namadita.
Thank you very much. For those of you who are wondering about the long vocalic R, the dot with the R with the dot under it and the makron over it, you'll find one in text 26. And you can see the effect it has. Tatrapashyat Siddhan Partha. In fact, you'll find two of them. Pitrinata Pitamaham Acharyan Matulan Bhartrin Putran Pautran Sakin Sata Sashuran Suridas Jaya Senayor Bayorati. So you hear Suridas just goes right by. Suridas, short syllables. Sashuran Suridas Jaya. So those are long, but the suhrid, rid is short syllable. But pitrinata pitamaha acharyan matulan karatrin. So they become long, accented syllables, and it's held longer, karatrin. Okay? Good. And we're back into the text.
And Arjun has get more out of me when I said that.
Arjun has asked Krishna, Lord Krishna, to drive the chariot up between the armies. The Lord has diligently done so. And Arjun is seeing all sorts of family members intimately related with him on both sides of the battlefield. And they're all ready to fight. But in this situation, he becomes overwhelmed. Physically, his mouth is drying up, the limbs of his body are shaking, his hair is standing on end, his skin is burning, and his mind is reeling. Nimittani cha pashyami viparitani kesham. Nimitta means cause, and viparitani, opposite causes. So, or nimitta also can mean like omen, but nimitta probably translates as cause. So I see everything is going in the opposite direction. I'm looking for happiness and I'm seeing grief. I'm looking for victory and I'm seeing defeat. Nimittani chapashyami viparitani kesham. Nacha shreyo nupashyami. I don't see any benefit. Hatva swajana mahave, from killing my own people. Nakangshe vijayam Krishna nacha rajam sukhanch. So I don't want a kingdom. I don't want victory. What will be the use of these things? We looked in 32 to 35. Better for them to kill me. And very significant line. Ka priti syaj janardana. What happiness will we get? Ka priti syaj janardana. What happiness will there be? And he addresses Kimno Rajen Govinda. Oh, Govinda, giver of pleasure. What, or knower, giver of pleasure. What happiness will there be? Oh, just let it go. I'll walk over it and knock over it 12 times before we're done here. What happiness will there be, oh Govinda, supplier of enjoyment? So that's his first argument. What happiness from killing our relatives? Now, papam eva shriye dasmam hatvaitan atatayanaha. Papa means sin. Sin will overcome us. Papam eva shriye dasmam hatvaitan atatayanaha. Even though they are aggressors, sin will overcome us. Tasman narha vayam hantum dhartarastran sabandhavan svajanam hi katam hatva sukhina syamamat. Again, sukhina syamamat. What kind of happiness will there be? This question about sin is a major issue in the Bhagavad Gita, which Lord Krishna will address many times over. But it's a major objection. It's sinful. It's not a very Western objection. Western objection, I don't want to. It's not me. It's not what I want to do. It's not my idea of how to be happy. All sorts of objections would be there, but sin would be unlikely to come into the picture. Sin? That went out 200 years ago. But Arjun, as a moral person, as a kshatriya, a person who upholds principles of dharma, That's what the Kshatriyas do. He's concerned. And as a person who's heard from enlightened authorities, what about sin? It's so out these days, sin. Even you joke about, hey, let's go out and sin. Sin City, yes, advertised, Las Vegas, right? Sin City, yeah. People look forward to the opportunity, even, you know, that if it's something tastes good, you say, that was sinfully good. Sin is very fashionable these days. Well, the devil wears Prada. You know, the sin is fashionable. But in Vedic culture or in real human culture, a person considers, is it right? Not just, will I profit? Not just, what will I get out of it? But is it right or wrong?
I was just curious, at the beginning of the purport, tells that no sin is included.
That's another point. We'll come to that. But the first point that is that in Vedic culture, they were aware that there's this thing called sin. The things that you're not supposed to do, the things that are illegal in the larger context, they'd be aware that there's something called reactions to sin. Sin will overtake us. Means the reaction to sin. Pap means not only the sinful thing that you do, but the reaction that comes to you. Just like karma means action, it also means what you get as a result of the action. So there's a, just like we might say, well, but that's illegal. And usually when we're saying it, we're not just concerned that we're breaking some law that someone said, but police may come after us. That's the big problem with illegal, like cheating on your taxes. Everybody's in favor of doing it. But the concern is not that I'm breaking the law, but that I may get caught. So that's already down a few steps. The first thing is, it's immoral. It's sinful. And the second thing is, therefore, reactions will come upon. And those reactions can be very heavy. Personal reactions. The reactions can come on me, they can come on my family, they can come on my community, they can come on my kingdom. When Parikshit Maharaj, after insulting the sage, Shamik Rishi, he went back to his palace and he was thinking that this is not very good. I've insulted a sage. And he thought, let the sinful reactions come upon me and not upon my people. Not upon my people. If there's that understanding. If I sin, others may have to suffer for what I did. Just someone commits a crime in the family, the whole family is stained. The whole family suffers from loss of reputation. They may suffer from legal costs. There may be breakup of the family. So many things can happen. If it happens to one person, it can happen to the whole family or the whole community. So Arjuna is concerned that sin can cause havoc for me and for others also. Papam ebashreya asman. It's not a small concern. Oh, what's sinful? But major. My life is supposed to be dedicated to dharma, to even pious activities are supposed to gain me a better future, a possible entrance into heaven. And by pap, by sin, I can go to hell. Or I can take life a low birth where I have to suffer. Who wants that? Apapam eva shriyev. Consequences can be terrible and it's immoral. Now, yes, as Vadheya brought up, there are counter considerations, and maybe I'll come back to those. Yajapyete napashanti lobho pata chetasa kulakshaya kritam dosha mitrachat joheja patakam katam nageyam asmavi papara smani vartitam kulakshaya kritam dosham prapashyat yujanara. O Janardana, killer of the enemies. Daimenatsi. These people are lobho pata chetasa. Their consciousness may have been captivated by greed. And therefore they can't see the great crime of destroying family. Kulak not just the family, but the whole dynasty. That's what's at stake here. The whole dynasty, generations are at risk of destruction. Mitra drohe chapatakam. They don't pataka. They don't see the sinful reaction from quarreling with your friends, fighting with your friends. But katam nageyam asmavi paparasman nipakitam. We can see it. We know. Basically, sometimes you say, why should I stoop to their level? They're greedy, they're blind, they're prepared to do anything for their sense gratification, even destroy a family. But when we know what is right, when we know what is sinful, why should we do these things? Better let them, if they want to be sinful, what can we do? But why should we become sinful? We see that in human dealings. Someone acts wrongly and then the other party responds. You know, I hit you below the belt, you hit me below the belt. I call you ill names, you call me ill names. I pull some dirty trick on you and you pull some dirty trick back on me. That's the world fights that way. But Arjuna says that because they're so greedy, they're ready to do anything and everything for sense gratification. But when we know what is right, and when we know what is wrong with destroying a dynasty, why should we do that? That's his argument. Now he explains. So, all right, so you kill a family, so what? There's lots of families. He knocked some people off. Kula che pranashyanti kula dharma sanatana. Dharme nashte kulam kritsnam adharmo bibhuvachita. When you destroy the family, then kula dharma sanatana. There's a tradition of dharma, of proper behavior, of occupational duty, which is described as sanatana, sanatana dharma. That's wiped out. This, just again, when the sages were asking about the birth of Parikshit, will he be worthy of the reputation of his forefathers? Will he uphold the same principles of his worthy predecessors? These things are handed down from generation to generation. That's culture, that's breeding. From generation to generation, these values come down in a good family. So now, when we kill the family, especially the elders of the family, we're going to kill all of that. Kula dharma, family duties, the family tradition will be lost, and dharme nashte kulam kritsnam adharmo vibhavati. And when you destroy that, then adharma flourishes. Anything goes. Anything goes. The family tradition is holding the standard of values, and when we wipe out the family, you'll just have helter-skelter. Then, what will happen? Adharma bibhavat Krishna parushanti kulastriya. The women in the family kulastriya will be parushanti. Parushanti means polluted. In the first edition, it says they'll become corrupt. But Prabhupada uses in the very powerful word polluted. They'll become polluted, you know, like a sewer. They'll become polluted. The family tradition depends upon chaste wives, devoted mothers. The women are so important. And when they become prostitutes, then what will happen? That's the present Western civilization. Who knows how many men his mother has had before she was married. Or before she was married this time. Or after. Pradushanti. There's no standard of chastity. When the traditions are lost, and when there's the tradition, then the father is instructing the, watching after the daughter, the mother is instructing the daughter, the whole family is seeing that the girl is brought up very nicely, married to a proper boy, everything appropriately done, so that the sanctity of the family will be maintained. And when you cut out all that, that is just desire and exploitation and mixing and accidental combinations, and everything just goes wild. The Pradushanti Kulastriha, the women become polluted, and Strishu Dushtarshu Varshneya Jayate Varnasankara. What's the result when the women become polluted? Varnasankara. And what's Varnasankara?
Unwanted
population. Varnasankara. It can be taken that generally the Kshatriyas would marry Kshatriyas, Brahmins would marry Brahmins, so that there's a tradition there. Boys and girls of a similar quality, the astrologers were consulted to see that the match was there. If they weren't of the same value, then at least the man would be of the higher section, that's called anulom, and not that the girl would be higher than in her quality than the husband, that's called pratilom, like that Lomaharshan Sutta, pratilom. These things would be mixed up. That's called Varnasankara. Or in a more general sense, Varnasankara just means unwanted population. Unwanted population. Literally unwanted. We don't know how he popped out. We weren't expecting that one. The sex is had just for sense gratification. And born within the family, born outside the family, from this relationship, from that relationship, and literally unwanted. Sometimes even we find that in the lower sections, the higher or lower, they try to kill the child, abort the child, because it's unwanted. Or else sometimes they literally throw the baby out, it's found in some trash can or some landfill. Or else they're allowed to live, but they live on the streets, practically speaking. Or they take on these demonic qualities because they're born not from a sense that of a religious union, but just out of sense of gratification. The parents got drunk and kids with unwanted population. Prophets of the hippies. Or the real ragamuffin, aimless people of Kali Yuga. Unwanted population, Varna Sankara. And what happens from Varna Sankara? Sankaro Nadakasyaiva. The unwanted children make life hellish. They make life hellish. They'll do anything, their senses are uncontrolled, their minds are uncontrolled, they're full of anger, they're full of lust, they're full of greed, they're full of confusion, madness. But what kind of society will you have when it's infested with such people, when such people are the heads of state? Sankaro Nadakasyaiva Kulagvan Gahanam Kulasyata. They make it hellish for the family and for those who've destroyed the family tradition. Patanti Pitaro Hyesham Lupta Pindoda Kakriya. In the Vedic system, there's a system called Pinda, by which the son is supposed to offer sacrifice, so that if somehow or other the ancestors have fallen into a hellish life, the sacrifice can liberate the trapped ancestor, maybe trapped in ghostly life or hellish life, so he can get relieved of that. There's a temple at Phalgu Tirtha.
Prayag.
No, not Prayag. Phalgu Tirtha is where they go for offering pinda. Not Prayag.
Prayag.
Prayag. Gaya. Thank you. Gaya is the place in Bihar. There's a temple of the Lord there, and the footprint of Lord Vishnu is there. But that place, Pindas offered sacrifice on behalf of the ancestors so that they can be freed from ghostly life. Therefore, the son is called Putra. Tra means Trayate, who delivers the ancestors from that kind of hellish life. So look to Pindoda Kakriya. That'll be lost. There'll be nobody to do that. Nobody will care. So there'll be consequences on that level.
I was just wondering how to deal with when there's women in the class and they're making a union with the movement, they're completely new, and you get these parts, and saying that they're like children. How about you say, when you're children? And that is insulting for a moment. And I'm just wondering how you deal with that.
How I deal with that? I stand by it. I don't find any use in pussyfooting or what's the word, retreating. But it can be explained in different ways. Children are emotional, and women are emotional. Women are emotional. That That's the fact. And children are dependent. Women are dependent. They want a husband, or they want, if they don't have a husband, then they latch on to a priest or a lawyer or someone who can give them security. There was one of the founders of the modern American feminist movement. Gloria Steinem. She started this Ms. magazine and was really a pioneer of the movement. And at a certain point, she got criticized, I believe. I wasn't following carefully. She got criticized because she sort of became a what's the word? Anyway, she became like the consort of a sort of a fat cat businessman. She became his girlfriend or whatever, companion. That's a good word. She became the companion of this fat cat businessman. I think that didn't last for so long, and then something else happened. But I don't know her history, and I have nothing against her. Don't know the lady. But she explained it at one point what happened was that she was traveling all over the country, and she was, you know, doing speaking engagements and, you know, rallying the troops and, you know, doing all of that. And at one point she came back to New York or wherever it was, and she was exhausted. She was exhausted. She was running around. And he sent his car with a chauffeur and, you know, all of that. And it was just chaos. You know, women are not up to it. They don't have that, the same stamina, the same drive, the same independent capability. So he sent his car, he sent his driver, and it's just natural that a woman wants to take shelter, just like a vine wants to find some trellis to latch onto. So women, by nature, are like that. They want to have a man that they can that they can lean on for security, for comfort, for especially security. That's natural. But as children. And then they're happy. The man will take care of their needs. Will look after them. Will see that they're loved and valued and protected. Otherwise, they're just like, where am I? What else can I say about that? Something else. About that. Yeah. So in that sense, and you can, a woman can break out of that mold, but then she'll be in a situation that's not exactly her nature. That's unnatural for her. And just like I can do business, but it's not my nature to do business. You know, it's my nature to teach. It's my nature to do that kind of stuff. Now, if I force myself, I think I could maybe go out there and do some business. But it's not. It makes me weird. You know. And then if I come in here with dollars and cents in my mind and thinking about pulling off a deal, then I'm not. That's not what I'm meant to do. Something like using a screwdriver for a chisel. You can do it, but that's not what the screwdriver is for. So the whole thing is so artificial. They're trying to establish equality. We're in favor of equality. Pandita Samadarshana. A saintly person sees everyone as being equal. But not materially. not materially. The idea that all men are created, that's already sexist, all men are created equal. It's not true. American, Declaration of Independence or Constitution? Declaration of Independence. You know, we believe this truth to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. What the hell are equal? The Einstein and the idiot are equal? You know, one was born practically brilliant, the other's born retarded, challenged, as we say these days. How are they equal? One's born rich, one's born poor, one's born, you know, like Bhima, with a body like that, and another's born with a body like mine. Now we're equal? That was Krishna and Balaram were sent into the wrestling arena against Chanur and Mushtika. Everybody, all the audience was saying, this isn't fair. You got these enormous, powerful wrestlers, and these are just little skinny boys. Well, of course, Krishna and Balaram weren't your ordinary village boys. But that kind of inequality is there, with different bodies, different minds, different everything. Where's the equality?
We heard a story that the ladies wanted to be equal with the firemen in some way or some place in the station, and they wanted to be not discriminated against, equal opportunity with the firemen. And then, okay, we can make 80 firemen, but they couldn't pick up a hose.
Yeah. Yeah. They do all these adjustments. The United States Army has done that. They're very into equal opportunity employment. I guess they want to have enough people to be killed on the battlefield so that women help fill up the quota or whatever it is. But they have different standards. You know, the number of push-ups that you have to do, the number of things you have to climb, and it's adjusted. It's not the same. So that the women can pass the test at a lower level. There was another Air Force similarly. United States is great at equality. All people are created equal. They wanted to open up the Air Force and show that they were being equal to everyone. So they admitted women into the fighter pilot training. There you take off from an aircraft carrier and you land on an aircraft carrier, and now we're opening it up to women because we see no difference, we make no discrimination. And there was some, I forget whether it was an enlisted man, I think maybe a low-level officer, and he submitted reports to his superiors that these women are messing up like anything. They were messing up like anything. They were, you know, landing in such a way that they were practically endangering the crew of the aircraft carrier. They were coming in at dangerous angles. They were doing all sorts of things that were not at all acceptable, and they were passing. You know, it was being just like, usually if you get like X number of those kind of things, you're out, you wash out of the program. But they were doing X plus and still in there. And then one of the women crashed and they explained that it was due to engine failure. And the guy said, yeah, if you descend your plane, you know, it's straight down, you're going to have engine failure. The plane isn't meant to do that. So he brought this out to the, I think, congressional attention, and maybe he lost his job in the process. But it was very wrong, because the Air Force was trying to do their equal opportunity thing, and he was embarrassing his superiors by presenting the facts. These women are not cutting the mustard, as they say, not meeting the standards. In the British Navy, they had a somewhat different experience. They wanted to be equal, and so they wanted to have female personnel on the submarines. Why only male personnel? Well, men and women both, traveling below the seas in one of these things. And who cried bloody murder over that? The wives of the men. Because, all right, maybe these bureaucrats were fools, but those women weren't. Those women weren't fools, not in that department. There are some departments where women are exceptionally bright, and that's one of them, knowing what's going to happen to their men. They said, wait a second, our husbands are going to be below the seas in this tin can with a batch of young women? No way. They understood. Excuse me? But who's more intelligent?
Women are more intelligent than men also.
Women are more intelligent than men.
In many fields.
In many fields. Sometimes. Sometimes. There may be men, there are men who are more intelligent, women who are more intelligent. It's not that every man is more intelligent than every woman. But still, at the end of the day, women are women. Just like you have children who are brilliant. We've probably said women are like children. There are children who are brilliant. I guarantee you, I could bring some children into this class who would wipe you all out with their brilliance. Maybe I couldn't bring, but children could be brought in who would outdo you in calculus, outdo you in Sanskrit, outdo you in logic, outdo you in, compose a Sanskrit verse on the spot. There are children who can do that. Brilliant. And still they're children.
So, Maharaj, how should we deal with such type of mentality of women who want to dominate man?
Keep your distance.
But Maharaj, we have to deal with such type of women in work who have a mentality to dominate.
Keep your distance. No, really. I mean, there are men who, I simply won't work under a woman boss.
Yes.
All respect to them, but I won't work under her. Or there are men who, you want to buy something, high ticket item, expensive item, they send a woman salesman. They're sorry, Because they know she's selling something more than the equipment. It's the smile, it's the sweet words, it's the, this is a $60,000 investment, and I'm going to make the decision based on, how even her teeth are. Lined up like little row of jasmine. So they want to keep their thought process straight. They say, send another salesman, or they go do the research separately. She said, wouldn't it be nice to have this little machine in your office? Frailty. Thy name is woman.
There's an interesting country, like in Bangladesh, which is predominantly a Muslim country, and generally none of the ladies in the market. In any shops or any. And yet the leader of the government and the leader of the opposition are women. It's kind of, I don't know how it happens.
Sometimes it happens because of American intervention. That, what was her name? Bhutto? Benazir of Bhutto. Yeah, Pakistan. America. Pulling strings as America does. Or
was that Indira Gandhi?
I'm not a citizen of this country. I don't want to say anything about Indira Gandhi. Prabhupada said something.
Well, you can quote that. You wouldn't be held accountable
now. No, but I won't. He didn't say them publicly. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada had a message that he wanted to send from Vrindavan or someplace to Juhu, because his leaders were in the midst of making a big mistake. So he entrusted this message to Vishakhadasi and sent her to Bombay with this message. And he apologized. He said that I shouldn't be asking you to do this because you're a woman, but there's no one else. So Prabhupada observed that distinction also. He observed that distinction. It's a sort of madness that in the modern setup, the men and women are given equal freedom and equal everything. And who are the victims of all this? Who gets the short end of the stick? Who's the one that gets exploited? It's the women. It's not that the women come out ahead as a result of all this, but they get exploited. They're the ones who go to the universities and they're, you know, told there's no difference between you and the man, and this is, and so they mix up and they get targeted, they get hit on, they become, you know, they're studying for an MBA to get master's of business, and they're not even at the level of a common prostitute. Because the common prostitute gives herself away to so many men, but she gets paid. And the college girl gives herself to an equal number of men, she doesn't even get paid for it. She's studying for an MBA, and she's giving away her valuable services free. She's less than a prostitute. It's unfortunate that the women go unprotected and therefore exploited. And do they become happy? Then they don't want to get married because marriage has so many, they had such bad experience. Nor are they actually fit for being married. Now everything, they're natural good qualities are deteriorated by being in an unnatural position. And the most intelligent women figure this out. I was reading Urmila Dasi, who's a very intelligent woman, sent me an item from some news clipping that there's a group that started at some of the Ivy League, the best American universities, where the women started a movement for chastity. You know, we are not going to be available to you guys. And it wasn't because they were Christian. It wasn't because they were religious. It was because they were smart. They figured it out. That these guys just use us. They sweet talk us, and they talk about love, and they talk about how beautiful we are, and they, you know, do a few favors for us, and then they want us to give ourselves to them, and then they enjoy us for a little while, and then they dump us. What's that? You know, how are we going to be happy that way? They're just using us like playthings. They figured it out. So they started a counter, you know, a revolutionary counter movement. You can't have us. If you want me, marry me. Mama Maya Duratya. Why is there so much pleasure in sinful activities? That's Maya's trick. The expression in English is give with one hand and take with the other. or it's what's called in chess a gambit. A gambit is a move in chess by which you give away, you forfeit some pieces, you jeopardize your position. You let your enemy capture some of your pieces. So it looks like the enemy's got the better of you. But it's a strategy. You figured out that when he jumps for your pieces, now you're actually going to be in a more powerful position because he's moved his knight here or his rook there or his pawn here. So you're actually, but you suckered him into it by saying, here, you know, or just like buy one, get one free, or just like no money down. Buy now, pay later. Everybody loves that. Buy now, pay later. Wow, I don't have to pay anything. Of course, I'll pay 36% interest over 2 years. But right now, I don't have to pay anything. So this is Maya's trick. She front-loads the enjoyment. She front-loads the enjoyment. All the enjoyment comes up front. And all the pain is backloaded. All the pain is backloaded. You get the enjoyment up front, and you get the suffering later. Vishyendriya samyogat yatsad agre amrito pamam. In the beginning, it's just like nectar. Pariname vishamiva. And at the end, it's like poison. Because no one would do it otherwise. Prabhupada said no one would have children if it weren't for the enjoyment that's put up in the beginning. Children mean suffering. So much money, the doctor bills, clothing, this, that. So many things. But there's some enjoyment that's put up in the beginning of it. No one would get entangled unless there was some enjoyment up front. This is Maya's trick. Like the fish. There's enjoyment. You bite the bait and you get some nice taste. And you're caught and strung up on a line, but you got a nice taste in the beginning. That's how Maya works. Anything else about this? Mm-hmm. Sure. Anything can happen. Is it advisable? Now that's another question. There are examples in our line of women who've become Diksha Gurus. One is Janava Mata, the personal energy of Lord Nityananda Prabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Another is Ganga Mata Goswamini, a very exceptional woman. Is there a third one? Maybe. I only know of those two. There may be others, but those two are the only ones that I can think of. So there's a precedent for it. Is it advisable? I think that takes us outside the realm of the class. My speculative prediction is that they'll do it and they'll regret it. All men what? Yeah. All men should be brahmacharis and all women should be married. Yes, that should be the standard. What do you need children for? There's plenty of them already. What to speak of children? How do the women get married when all the men are brahmacharis.
All the women are like children.
Ah, see, that solves the problem. Prabhupada says something that you have to manage. That should be the standard. All the women should be married and all the men should remain brahmacharis. Then everything will be nice. That you have to manage. That you have to manage. That's it.
Does that mean that they need to be in custodian, so in the state?
No, he meant brahmacharis, like this. all the women and none of the men should get married. That's the idea.
Prabhupada means that?
Yeah.
Ashram,
brahmacharya. Yeah. Yeah, all the women should get married and none of the men should get married. Very simple. You have the same question.
No, something else.
Something
else. Okay. Verse 37, purport mentioned about obligation.
Tell me.
Obligation is actually binding.
No, tell me what verse?
37. Hmm. Obligation is actually binding when the effect is good, but when the effect is otherwise, then no one can be wrong.
Yeah. Arjuna is saying, okay, it may be my duty to fight, but not when there's a bad result. Not when there's a bad result. We have to look at things both sides. Okay, it's my duty to fight. Not when I have to do something like this, then it's not good. Nimittani viparitani, the result is going to be otherwise. So this may be my obligation, but not under these circumstances. You could probably give other examples where if I follow this obligation, then something bad is going to happen. That is like Lord Ramchandra. If I send my son to the forest, Dasarath, then people will be unhappy and this and this and this and this. So on various grounds he didn't want to do it. Why is it an obligation? So Arjuna is saying, okay, it may be obligation, but look at what's going to happen. Women are going to be polluted, the family tradition is going to be lost, the offerings to the ancestors are going to be stopped, sin is going to overcome us. And you're just talking to me about obligation? That's the argument. Something else. Okay. You're looking at the clock and saying, where's our break? Right? That's the question, right? We started at 4 o'clock, we're going till 6:15 is about the middle, right? Let's see where we are.
I went to a Harihar Kshetra today with this guy in Mayapur.
With this guy in Mayapur?
Gaya, where they do the Pindadan.
Oh, they have Gaya in Mayapur.
They have Gaya in Mayapur, Harihar Kshetra, and there was a footprint of Vishnu.
What's the name of that person?
Gadadhar.
And what's the temple called?
I have been
there. Yeah. It's Phagu Tirtha. It's Gaya. It's been a long time. Should I stop here and let you have your break, or I'll take some more questions? Okay.
I just want to know that I'm understanding this correctly. All these points are being given by Arjuna, is it for me to understand that even if this is going to happen, this is going to happen, this is going to happen, I still have to listen to Krishna's order?
You definitely have to still listen to Krishna's orders. The setup is that Arjuna is giving good reasons. He's giving good reasons. These are not the arguments that a demon would offer. A demon would just say, okay, kingdom, revenge, enjoyment, you know? Go for it. The demon just is looking forward to it. And Arjuna is thinking, what about Dharma? What about the women? What about the ancestors? What about the family tradition? What about the fact that these are all my relatives? What about sin? Well, he's considering all of these points, which, number one, as Prabhupada will say at the end of the chapter, shows that he's a soft-hearted and noble Vaishnava, the kind of person who's eligible to receive transcendental instruction. You know, it's hard, like, not everyone can understand spiritual realization. You want a candidate who's inquisitive, who's decent in a certain way, a person who's ultimately like seeking truth, seeking higher values, higher purpose in life. I was at Rath Yatra in New York. And it's in a big park. Guy came up to me, you know, kind of like New York profile, sunglasses, and the, you know, the enjoyer profile. He's got a girl with him, with her, you know, skirt up to up to there. Sits down. Girl sits on his lap. Says, "So, what's your philosophy?" Well, son, it's going to be a little hard for you to understand. So we see what kind of person Arjuna is, that he's weighing what is my duty, what should I do. He's compassionate. He's thinking about the welfare of others. So he's a person who's eligible for receiving transcendental instructions from the Lord. That's one point. On the other side, when you establish an argument, or establish a, when you establish an argument, when you want to establish a principle, when you want to prove something, you want to prove it against your opponent's best argument. Right? If I want to prove that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or I want to prove that we should build a new brahmacharya ashram behind the lotus building, or we want to prove this, I want to prove it against the best arguments. Not against the worst arguments. Not against the argument, well, I don't know, or, Krishnadasi doesn't think that's such a good idea, or you know, some flimsy argument. Give me your best argument. Give me your best argument. Because if I can defeat your best argument, then I've really established the case. Give me your five best arguments. If my theory or my argument, my principle, what I want to establish, can stand up against your best arguments, then it's established, then it's strong. Not the flimsiest, not the weakest, not the easiest case. Give me your hardest case. Give me your worst case scenario, as they say. So Krishna set it up that way. It's not just like a moral decision between should I kill this rapist or should I kill this murderer or not. Should I kill Bhishma? Should I kill Drona? Should I kill my brothers? Should I kill my uncles? Should I kill my friends? Should I wipe out a whole dynasty? Should I leave all of these women unprotected? Should I invite sin? Should I knowingly act the way they want to act, these greedy men? All the best arguments. Kadambakanan Maharaj was telling me, what Kadambakanan Maharaj? You were telling me. We've been lunch today. That, yeah, there was a play performed, you were saying, of Bhagavad Gita showing this encounter that, and Arjuna is speaking in the first chapter, and finally he says, I shall not fight. And the audience goes, yay! Because after you read all of Arjuna's arguments, you're convinced. You look at this and say, there's my man. That's what I would stand for. I wouldn't want to kill my brothers and my, you know, let them kill me. This is noble. I'll stand there and let them kill me rather than do this injustice. I'll stand there without even any weapon in my hand and let them kill me rather than my going out and just for the sake of greed, just for the sake of my own sense gratification, fighting for a kingdom, I'll just stand there and let them kill me. That will be better. People think, what a man. Huh? So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna sets up the best case. The best case. Arjuna has, in one sense, all the arguments on his side. He lines them all up. And then comes chapter 2.
Just the implication of Kulacharya. It seems as though the living being can incur karmic reaction. That's not of his own accord.
That's not what?
That's not of his own accord, because Kulacharya leads to Vana Samsara. So it seems as though I don't know how much of it is a living being's individual karma and how much.
Yeah, that will come up in later in the Bhagavad Gita. Now, how much is it suppose there's going to be Varna Sankara, there's going to be all these things. How much of it will be because of what Arjuna does? How much of it will be for some other reason? Why do these things happen? Can I actually create this circumstance where this happens? Even can I actually kill these people? These items are all going to be questioned by Krishna. Does that address your question, or am I missing it? Okay.
I had an additional thought on Abhay's question about this Arjuna struggling with the concept of what Krishna wants, because he's not really considering what Krishna wants at this stage.
Yeah. It's done with the Buddha, because the world is the relationship changes at the beginning of the second chapter, and then that Krishna is the instructor.
Yeah, that
this stage is kind of like your friends talking.
Yeah, friends are talking, and Arjuna is presenting his situation. And and we see it's a mixture of it's not only logic, but it's gut feeling. His whole being is possessed by this sense of I can't do it, I shouldn't do it. Yes.
What would be if Arjuna didn't ask all these questions to Krishna and still, for example, he would think, okay, my best friend Krishna wants me to fight, and because he's my best friend, I would fight, and he would actually defeat all this, but he would not be fully convinced. Would the result, I mean, external result would be the same, but would the internal result be the same?
What would happen if Arjuna hadn't asked these questions? He hadn't become bewildered, he just said, okay, show me the armies. Okay, there they are. Okay, let's go get them.
No, he would be a little bit bewildered, but not fully.
A little bit bewildered. How much bewildered? What do you mean?
I mean, he would think that there's something not right here.
Something's fishy here, but let's go out and do it.
Yeah.
So then what would happen?
Because Krishna asked me, I will fight. You know?
Krishna didn't ask him. He's Arjuna's in command. Krishna's just the charioteer.
But then he would ask him a question.
If he'd ask Krishna, well, I don't know, Krishna, it looks kind of iffy. What do you think? Well, I'd go for it. Okay. If it was like that. Main thing that would happen is we'd lose a pretty important book. I'm not sure. What is your question?
Yeah.
What would happen in that sense? What would be the result for who, for what?
The other cause is that, for example, sometimes we're not fully convinced in what we are doing, but we're still doing it. And the result, it is still the same for us, even if we are not convinced in what we're doing.
Uh-huh. What if Arjuna did it without full knowledge? Well, he'd be doing his duty. But he wouldn't be doing it with Krishna consciousness. He'd be doing it, well, here I am, I'm supposed to fight, I'm going to fight. That's good. He's doing his job. But Bhagavad Gita is not just about do your job, although a lot of Hindu people think that's it. So what's the message of Bhagavad Gita? Do your duty only. That's what they get from Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita says, do your duty only. You are a businessman, you are having to do the business only. That's Bhagavad Gita. They have no idea that Bhagavad Gita means that you have to surrender to Krishna. Maam ekam sharanam. Just do your duty. So maybe Arjuna would have done that. All right, I'm a fighter, and Krishna is saying, hey, go out there and get him. Okay. But that's different from what the confidential knowledge that Krishna reveals to Arjuna. Arjuna would not have gotten the benefit of that, and we wouldn't have gotten the benefit of that. And therefore Krishna sets it up. He doesn't let Arjuna be a little bit in Maya. He throws him in deep Maya. Or deep bewilderment, deep confusion, deep, perplexity. What should I do? I don't know what to do. That's exactly where Krishna wants him to be. Because it's a drama. Krishna is the director. So he's setting it up that way.
So it means that full surrender is possible under full conviction only.
Full surrender is possible. Yeah, full surrender is only possible with full conviction. Yes. Surrender means conviction.
Maharaj, you're thinking about how we live Gita, the part
if Arjuna had not asked this question.
Yeah. There'd be no book.
So in the purport for the verse 1, Prabhupada mentions that one reads Bhagavad Gita and doesn't need to read or it surpasses all the other Vedic wisdom. In that context, how do I understand the importance of Srimad Bhagavatam? Like one of the speakers yesterday, he said about the sutras and Puranas, and then Upanishads. Gita falls under Upanishads and Bhagavad Purana is above
that. No, Gita falls in histories actually. Gita's part of Mahabharata, which is history. But it's giving the essence of the Upanishads.
So the importance of Bhagavatam is not undermined?
No. When Prabhupada says he surpasses all, it means all this other literature. The Upanishads, the Puranas, this, that, the other thing. The Bhagavatam is postgraduate study. It begins where Bhagavad Gita leaves off. Is that okay? I can keep going if there's more questions. I'm just a little bit wondering whether I should give you your break. Would you like your break? You don't want your break? You do want your break. There may be some like very practical reasons that some people would like a break. Yeah. I'm going to give you your break and come back in 10 minutes. Yeah, I'll say 10 minutes off, 6:50. And then whatever questions there are, we will resume. Krishna, Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Good that in the break time can I get the recorder back or should be
coming here? That's fine. During the break there's nothing to record.
Thank you. Sorry.